I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word, it's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
WPHD, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast.
This is the next generation of talk. Now, on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Rich Zeoli.
A tale of two presidents. Former President Donald Trump is at a funeral for a fallen NYPD officer. Joe Biden attending a fundraiser tonight with Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Stephen Colbert, and a bunch of other people you hate. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. Thank you for being here. 855-839-1210. And on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli. It is Thursday, and we got a lot to chat about. So, let's chat about it, shall we? First of all, I want to just play this again. We played it last hour for you, but I think it's important. I'm a son of a cop, so I have a very special soft spot in my heart for cops. And, of course, you know, like anything else in life, when you have to watch a funeral for something like this, it's heartbreaking. You know, 31-year-old guy. And slain by a guy who was arrested a bunch of times and never should have been on the streets. It's horrible. It really gets to you. Trump going there is politically smart. I know it's not why he did it, though. I know he's not doing it for political purposes. I know he really, in his heart, means it. He wants to be there for the family, and the cops love it. And cops love the guy. They do. I mean, they do. I have a lot of friends who are cops, and they think he's great. Because he stands with law enforcement. It doesn't mean that, you know, I mean, look, he signed criminal justice reform. There were times when, obviously, like any other profession, there are going to be people within that profession who do something wrong, and they should be dealt with like in any other profession. But police are it's the only profession where if somebody does something wrong, everybody is guilty. Like if there's a dentist who does something terrible to you, not every dentist has to be, you know, it's like you don't defund the dentist when you have a dentist who's a creep with somebody or something like that. It's not how it works. There could be a doctor who's terrible. We don't defund doctors. But if a cop does something wrong, then you get the defund the police movement. And the Democrats were all behind this. Now, when you talk to somebody like Amon Brown, our buddy, right, who fights for the people of West Philadelphia, and he talks about the crime all the time, and you ask him, you say, what do people think about cops? He says, they want more. More cops on the streets. And cops go out there every day not thinking about killing people. And, of course, we have told you time and again, and Wilfred Riley has told us this, and hopefully he'll actually be on the show tomorrow. The idea that cops are going around just killing black people is just such a lie. You know, it's one of those lies that the left tells and perpetuates all the time. There are cities that are literally under siege right now. Crime is the third biggest issue in this country. And for some people, they deal with it acutely because their prosecutors are people who believe that the criminals are the victims of society and society's hierarchical, patriarchal, blah, 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 capitalistic, white, paternalistic structure, blah, blah, blah. So Trump going to speak going to the funeral means so much to every cop in this country. It really does. I'm telling you right now, it means a lot to them. He doesn't have to be there. He's not going to win New York. This isn't like the kind of thing where I know that you may get a visceral reaction to that and be like, he could. Nah, he's not going to. He doesn't have to. You just focus on the states that you need to win and spend your money there and spend your resources there. And we'll be fine. Don't worry about trying to flip California or New York or Hawaii or New Jersey. Win Pennsylvania. Win Michigan. You win the White House. Trust me on this. But my point is that it's not like he's doing this for political purposes. He really wants to be there. And it meant a lot to them. And this is what he said outside the funeral for this 31-year-old officer who was shot dead in Queens. Take a listen.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much, everybody. I want to thank Bruce and all of the people that have worked so hard to make this area beautiful and safe. And this is what happened, is such a sad event, such a horrible thing. And it's happening all too often. And we're just not going to let it happen. We just can't. 21 times arrested this thug. And the person in the car with him was arrested many times. And they don't learn because they don't respect. They're not given the respect. The police are the greatest people we have. There's nothing and there's nobody like them. And this should never happen. I just visited with a very beautiful wife that now doesn't have her husband. Stephanie was just incredible. Their child, brand new, beautiful baby, sitting there, innocent as can be, and doesn't know how his life has been changed. But the Diller family will, you'll never be the same. You can never be the same. And we have to stop it. We have to stop it. We have to get back to law and order. We have to do a lot of things differently because this is not working. This is happening too often. It's an honor to be here. And again, I want to just thank all of you folks for allowing this. And Bruce, thank you. Bruce has been a friend of mine for a long time. He's done an incredible job out here. But this is such a sad occasion. The only thing we can say is maybe something is going to be learned. We've got to toughen it up. We've got to strengthen it up. This should never be allowed. Things like this shouldn't take place and to take place so often. So thank you all for being here. It's an honor, and it's an honor for me to be here. This is a great family, the Diller family. I met the friends, and I met every one of them inside, and these are just incredible people that are just devastated. They're devastated. They've got a tough road. It's going to be a very tough road. So thank you very much, everybody. Appreciate it. Thank you, Bruce.
Okay. 855-839-1210. Well, speaking of dentists, there's a guy who you can always trust, who will always do the right thing, and that's my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria. And he is a sponsor of this hour, of course. Dr. Veneria is my buddy and my dentist. And with two locations to serve you, in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, schedule your free implant consultation today for your perfect smile. Call 856-786-2020, 856-786-2020, or visit veneriadental.com. That's V-A-N-A-R-I-A, veneriadental.com. I tell you, the reality of the situation, what we're dealing with, we've been fighting about truth and misinformation and the battle for your mind and the battle to control the information that you see. And there was a great debate that took place today on social media between two people that I think the world of, my friend Faith and our friend Susie Cool. And they're going back and forth about this bill in Florida that DeSantis signed about banning, you know, the Utes from being on social media. And I know that I may be in the minority in this opinion, but I think it is a terrible idea to do this because it is going to play into the hands of what the left ultimately wants, which is to run a gigantic censor operation on social media. It's the same thing why I'm against this bill that would force the sale of TikTok to an American company, because they've said the quiet part out loud. This is not about China getting your data, much like how this is not about the children. This is about controlling social media so they can shut down people they don't like Elon Musk, like Donald Trump. Truth Social is worth $9 billion now after yesterday's trading on the NASDAQ. Well, let's see how it closed out today, Matt, if you don't mind for me. We'll see how Truth Social did today. So Trump's a billionaire, and they want to shut that down. They don't like the idea that they can't control people. And you see, and this is the key, is that the corporate media, big tech and the government, the unholy triad, as I call them, they all work together to make sure that you are told what the message is. And most importantly to them, that they view your thoughts now as critical infrastructure. So you're told what is not the truth. You are literally told what is disinformation. And you're told that, and they want to control that. And a big part of the way they do that is by controlling the narrative using the three legs: the government, social media, and corporate media. If you have outliers, and where are the outliers? The outliers are in radio. The outliers are on the internet. Think of where the biggest, right now, the alternative to corporate media is where? It's online. It's online. You have people on Twitter, X. You have people on YouTube, TikTok, whatever, who are putting out conservative libertarian messages that contradict specifically what the corporate media is telling everybody. And any effort to regulate that by the government is going to play directly into the hands of the left. And they want it. They're begging for it. It's like, remember Br'er Rabbit? Don't throw me in the briar patch. That's what this is to me. This whole thing is a don't throw me in the briar patch moment. They want social media regulated so they can shut down some pain in the neck conservative commentator who does an X podcast or an X cast or whatever they call it, X spaces, whatever it is, talking about the border, talking about COVID, talking about whatever. They want to be able to shut that person down. And that's where the future is. That's where the future is in media. It's going to be, everything's going to be online. Because as corporations wind up cutting back on news or cutting back on media outlets, or people feel restrained, like they can't speak. Take the woman from ESPN we talked about yesterday. You know, she left ESPN because she said, I can't take it anymore. You made a dude the woman of the year. You know, you made Leah Thomas, Will Thomas, Penn, for Women's History Month, the woman of the year. I'm out. I'm done. Where'd she go? Sage Steele. Thank you, Matt. Where'd she go? She's starting her own show on YouTube. You see, every time you get into this game of regulation, the government doesn't just regulate a little. The government regulates a lot. And the analogy that somebody used was, well, you know, kids, we don't let them smoke cigarettes. We don't let them join the military. We don't let them do these things till they're 18. So it's fine if we keep kids off social media until they're a certain age because they're just kids. But the other thing I want you to think about is, if kids are not allowed on social media, are they going to miss out on hearing an alternative from one of these conservative voices? Because right now, if you think of the average American classroom, where the kids in those classes are learning what the government wants them to know, they can get different opinions and they can get challenging opinions to that by listening to me or by going on the internet, social media, and listening to the various voices that are out there. And that's only going to continue. So just think about that unintended consequence of it as well. You're giving more power to the state and the message that they put forward. Joe Rogan had a good point about reporters. And I think this goes to the overall theme. By the way, I want to mention Pennsylvania. This was a big ruling. This was a big win. A court has ruled now in favor of signature verification for mail-in voting. So this is a big deal. It is the U.S. Third Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of signature verification for mail-in voting for the state of Pennsylvania. It's a 2-1 ruling. The case is not over yet because it's still going to keep going. 2-1 ruling by 3 Democrat appointed judges, the U.S. Third Circuit Court of Appeals overturned a previous ruling from a federal district court that struck down the Pennsylvania state court's ruling that required a dated signature requirement for mail-in voting. In November of 2022, the RNC, the NRCC, that's the National Republican Congressional Committee, and the Pennsylvania Republican Party secured a victory on this issue in front of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. What did they argue? They argued that the law in Pennsylvania, passed by the legislature, says that ballots have to be dated. And they won. And the court agreed. Yeah, the law is the law. But guess what? There was a federal lawsuit that came out and said, no, if you discard that ballot, if somebody didn't date it, you are depriving them of their civil rights by their own mistake. I mean, they made the mistake. You didn't take the pen out of their hand. You didn't white out the date. You didn't do anything. But you, being the entity that enforces the elections, you are depriving them of their civil rights, even though they made the mistake that is clearly stated what they have to do for that ballot to count. They messed up and somehow now we are violating their civil rights if we don't count their ballot, which they incorrectly filled out. It's absurd. It's absurd, but they went to federal court. So then the lower court sided with them. And now this victory means that in Pennsylvania, you're going to have the mail ballots will have to be dated. We'll see if this goes and gets challenged again, but it was a huge deal. In fact, my buddy Linda Kearns texted me last night with the decision when it came out, and I was thrilled. I really was. I was thrilled by this because this needs to stop. I mean, only a moron can't fill out a ballot correctly, and morons vote for Democrats. So this is why the Democrat Party wants it. But it was the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. And as of right now, ballots must be dated. Big news, a huge win for election integrity. Absolutely, no question about it. Huge win. So let's hope this stands. I really hope it stands. This is Joe Rogan talking about reporters, specifically New York Times reporters, but take a listen.
New York Times has just started doing this new thing on Instagram where they take the actual writers and they have the writers talk about the issues.
I'm leaving.
And when you see they don't understand what they're doing. This is exactly who we thought was writing these things. It's like this very effeminate guy and this woman that it's like the kind of woman that seems like
you should
she
have
would
never
fucking
done this. Yeah.
Do at a party, like talk down to you. And it's
just who you thought.
Yeah, exactly. The type of people that would, you know, these ultra liberal, out of touch people.
Yeah.
And these people are talking about, one of the guys was talking about Donald Trump's words being taken out of context, that it would be a bloodbath because he was talking about the auto industry and the economy. And then this guy starts bringing up other episodes of violent rhetoric. It's hilarious. But you gotta watch this. Look. Give me some blood. Give me some
God.
Blood.
Well, no. What I guessed.
On. Seized on those comments and said they were an example of him calling for political violence or predicting violent actions if he didn't win in November. His supporters said that those comments were taken out of context.
Like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Trump has a history of using violent rhetoric dating back to his 2016 campaign. That language took on new significance after the January 6th attack on the Capitol in 2021. And throughout his third campaign for president, he's been getting a lot of attention for the way he talks about violence and retribution on the trail. He suggested
Imagine sitting down and having lunch with somebody who talks like that in real life. Like sitting down and actually having a conversation with somebody who sounds like that person. That's what Joe Rogan's talking about. It sounds exactly like who you'd expect. This effeminate sounding New York Times reporter sounds exactly like you'd expect. And that's the thing. Now, Catherine Herridge was fired by CBS News. Where's she going? She's going to X. She's going to start a new show. Talks are preliminary, but it looks like she's going to wind up being on X, the new platform. That's what I mean. Everything is moving towards the space of the internet. Everything is moving towards the space of social media. See, the New York Times is trying to get in on the action now by doing these Instagram things. Don't you think the government would love to be able to regulate social media so that they can make sure that what you just heard, that's the truth, and anything that contradicts what you just heard in that Joe Rogan clip would be considered misinformation or disinformation. That's the ultimate goal here. They want to regulate everything about social media. Everything. Is there more of that clip? Go ahead.
New York Times.
It's all falling apart.
This is these hard-nosed reporters with a cup of coffee that are like chasing down leads, and they're pulling their hair out, and they're meeting people in back alleyways. This is Woodward and Bernstein.
Do people think that
this
still
is Watergate?
Like
no, but I mean they're essentially like ultra hard left activists that are masquerading as journalists.
They are ultra left activists masquerading as journalists. So true, so true. So I just think it's in our best interest. And our side of the political aisle, I think it's in our best interest to keep the government the hell out of social media. I don't care. I don't want to listen to their BS about the children. I don't believe it. They don't care about our kids. If they did, they wouldn't let our kids chop off their boobies at 14. If they cared about our kids, they would not allow biological males to compete against our daughters. They don't give a damn about our kids. That's the excuse. And I don't want the government regulating social media under the other guise, which is China. They don't care about China. China's got access to our data through all kinds of different means besides TikTok. And all these corporations are in bed with China. That's why they all covered up for the COVID lab leak. Think about it. Who was the guy back in February of 2020? What show was he on? The Chinese ambassador to the United States sat down on CBS. Sat down with the Sunday anchor on CBS and said, it's racist for you to suggest this virus came from our lab. They're all in the tank on protecting China. That's why they all took down the COVID lab leak. Anything about it, because China was offended by that. That's why Disney doesn't, I mean, nobody cares about the Uyghurs. You know, and Disney will film the Mulan live action show right there and actually thank the people that are imprisoning the Uyghurs. So don't buy this idea that they're really doing this for China. Don't buy the idea they're doing this for the children. No, no. They're doing this so they can regulate the social media so that they can make sure that people who are going against what they want to be the information can be silenced. You got to see the bigger picture here. If we've learned nothing, it's that when the government gets its nose under the tent a little bit, remember what Reagan used to talk about with the camel's nose under the tent? It's not just ever a little bit. And that whole tent's going to be collapsed very, very soon. You do not want to go down this road. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Listen, NJ Diet's going to help you lose weight. And I'm talking about real weight loss, fat loss, because NJ Diet actually works. Unlike the shots that have all these side effects and big pharma's making all this money on this and people are having terrible, terrible side effects, NJ Diet is all natural. And with summer right around the corner, before you know it, you're going to be taking your shirt off at the pool, your shirt off at the beach. For over a decade, NJ Diet has helped thousands of people lose a contractually guaranteed 20 to 40 plus pounds in only 40 days. That's nearly twice as fast as weight loss injections and without any of those nasty side effects. NJ Diet uses your hair and saliva along with scans to personalize natural solutions and supplements to get you to shed that fat quickly. Then, NJ Diet uses your DNA info to help you keep the weight off. You are fully supervised the entire time to make sure you are burning fat and not just losing water. And you even get the doctor's personal email and phone number. Locations in King of Prussia, Cherry Hill, and Newark, Delaware, are available from home with live online video consultations. Just call 855-5-NJ-DIET. 855-5-NJ-DIET or schedule your consult today. Do it the right way. Don't be a sucker for big pharma and all the side effects from these shots. You want to do this the right way, the way that's going to work, and that's the NJ Diet way. NJDiet.com.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The Zeoli Show, on your schedule, from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
All right, welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli on X. I got to start saying that on X at Rich Zeoli. Professor Steve Henke, it is an honor to have him on the show. He is a professor of applied economics at Johns Hopkins University, former senior economist for Ronald Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors. Professor Henke, welcome back to the show and thank you for joining me. It's an honor to have you.
Well, it's great to be with you, Rich.
There's a big deal, this big study, and the editorial, COVID Lessons Learned, 4 years later, mandatory lockdowns had almost no benefit, but did significant economic and health-related damage. These people will never learn.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. The big problem is that a lot of this research that we've done has been censored either directly or indirectly. So most of your listeners probably won't have heard of any of it. But the big study that we did, it was published actually in London as a peer-reviewed book. We looked at about 20,000 studies that had looked at the effects, the health effects of lockdowns, various restrictions on people's restrictions on movement, shutting down schools, wearing face masks, mandatory social distancing, all of these things. And we ended up in this, what they call a meta-analysis. Rich, we ended up with 22 studies that were high quality that could actually be normalized and compared with one another and so forth. And what we found out is that the lockdowns in the USA probably saved about 4,000 lives. Now, that's a very, you know, it's tragic, of course, for the anyone that get caught up and killed in a pandemic of one sort or another. But 4,000 lives saved, and each year about 38,000 people die of the flu in the United States. So that gives you a perspective. When I say the effect was small, that's what I mean.
Right.
So that's what we're ending up with. All these, you know, shelter in place, mask mandates, business closures, limited gatherings, school closures. All of these things had virtually no effect on COVID and the mortality rate. And you see this, by the way, if you look at Sweden, for example. Remember when the pandemic started, everyone was hammering Sweden because Sweden was not locking down. They had kind of a laissez-faire approach. They were informing the public that there was a pandemic, that it was dangerous to do this, that, or the other thing, and people adjusted their behavior. Now, Lars Jöning and I looked into this. He's a colleague of mine in Sweden at Lund University, distinguished economist. We looked into the Swedish case early on to see why they were using this approach. And as it turns out, their constitution, which was written in the 16th century, would prohibit the use of lockdowns. In other words, in the constitution, it writes that Swedes will have the liberty to move freely inside the realm, Sweden, and the state cannot interfere with their movement in any way. So it would have been unconstitutional to start with. Plus, they had a different, they didn't have Dr. Fauci running the show. They had a very experienced epidemiologist who knew what a pandemic was when he saw it, and this was his approach. Inform the public, let them make their own judgments and adjustments, and go forward. So they didn't have the school closures or almost any of these other mandates that we had in the United States or in Europe. Europe had the same problem. We looked at the European case, by the way, and about 6,000 lives were saved in Europe because of lockdowns, but about 72,000 people die of the flu every year in Europe. So again, you get a sense of the magnitude and context of what I'm talking about here.
So this extensive study, and Professor Henke, you said there's a lot of efforts right now to bury this and censor this, and that's very troubling. You said that right at the start of the interview.
Oh, this let me give you one example. One in Great Britain, the United Kingdom has a what they call an inquiry underway, looking at, you know, what happened during the pandemic, who did what right, who did what wrong, how did the government react to it, and all of this. So that we have tried to enter our peer reviewed book into evidence in the inquiry, and it's been rejected three different times, including one detailed request was made by Minister of Parliament, Steve Baker. And Baker and I have actually written op-eds in the Times of London on the COVID lockdowns and the effect of the COVID lockdowns. But the inquiry has stonewalled it, not let it in. So it isn't even evidence. It's a book published in London, peer-reviewed on the subject. It's the only meta-analysis that's available. It's the only big study. It's really a study of the studies. It's kind of like what we used to call in the old days a review of the literature.
Right.
You look at all the literature out there and make a judgment about what the findings were in the literature. What's the literature telling us? What's the story? And the story is the lockdowns had a very tiny health effect, and the economic effect, getting into the economics of it, it was a complete disaster. I mean, we shut down the economy in the United States, huge losses in terms of income. And think about the schools. This school fallout has been tremendous. The test scores have gone way down since the COVID school closures. That group of students that was closed out of school are performing much more poorly than they would have performed if they had been going to school, which stands to reason. I mean, figure it out. I mean, if you don't go to school or you're doing it on Zoom or something, and you know what happens on Zoom. I mean, they're in attendance, they're on Zoom, but what are they doing? They're fiddling around with their iPhones or whatever. Right. You know, maybe they're not even there. They tune in on the Zoom and then don't show their picture on the video, and they're off, playing cards or something else.
And then you have the health effects of this, and I found this to be amazing. So when you looked at the healthcare utilization rates between 2020 and 2022, in spring of 2020, nearly half of the nation's 650,000 chemotherapy patients did not get treatment. 85% of living organ transplants were not completed. One study found that there were 35.6% fewer calls for cardiac emergencies after March 10th, 2020, compared with the prior year. Emergency room visits were down between 40% and 50%. That doubtless contributed to observed non-COVID excess deaths and may continue to do so as Americans suffer from undetected cancers and other long-term conditions. And then there's also, you know, the people that were struggling with addiction, who couldn't go to AA meetings, for example. People who had mental issues who could not go see their psychologist or their therapist. All of those effects, too, that I don't think we talk enough about as a massive unintended consequence of this. Because if all this is based on public health, and then we had so many public health disasters that occurred as a consequence of this, that has to be front and center.
Oh, this is the collateral damage due to this. I'm glad you walked everybody through that laundry list of things that are still with us, by the way. And the one thing you didn't point out that's the critical thing, the big lie was that hospitals were overwhelmed. Remember
right.
that?
Right.
Hospital. No, the utilization rate in hospitals went down. They had more spare space than they had before the pandemic hit in February of 2020. So that was just an utter lie. I mean, the lies coming out of the public health establishment were just mind-boggling. But this is, you know, you know when a hospital is being utilized or not utilized. We have the data on that. And the utilization went down. So people were told, don't go to the hospital because they're overwhelmed. You know, they don't have space. They can't do your chemo. They can't do this, that, and the other thing. That was just a lie.
When you think about the net effect of the state of mind of Americans, I know that there's in your op-ed that you wrote with Dr. Atlas, you point out, you say, you know, one result of the government's COVID response is that Americans have lost faith in public health institutions. Do you think that's the case, or have we become programmed like sheep to respond? You know, when this happens again, you know, you hear the World Economic Forum talk about Pandemic X and how this was just a warm up and they want more lockdowns, not less. They want to go even further here. And the United States now has an agreement to go along with this. I mean, do you think the American people will believe it the next time that there actually is something we really should be worried about? Or do you think the American people will fall in line and obey and comply because of how they acted during COVID?
Well, it's kind of a double-edged sword here. I think what you have two things going on. The one thing is that the trust in the public health establishment, the trust of the elites has gone way down. So trust is gone down. Now that's a bad thing, because, for example, one reason that things worked in Sweden so well, when the public health authorities would give them information, is that they trusted. They have very high level of trust in Sweden of the public health authorities, and in that, in the U.S., that's simply not going to be the case. But on the other hand, you've got fear. So trust has gone way down, but fear has gone way up. And when people are afraid, they get into line and do what the government tells them to do. And this, by the way, if you go back and look at the history of the writing on this, Thomas Hobbes wrote Leviathan, and that fear was the whole basis for Leviathan. You give the government all your privacy, all your rights and everything, if you're afraid you're going to get killed.
Right.
So this is a dual thing going on, and it's very bad. The lack of trust is bad, and the excessive fear is bad too. And one reason we have the excessive fear, it's the epidemiologists that do this, and the Imperial College of London, that's the gold standard for epidemiological studies, is at the Imperial College. And the Imperial College, their model said that about 1.7 to 2.2 million people in the United States would die of COVID if we didn't lock down. And of course, that put the fear of God in everybody, and gave the license to Fauci and the people in charge to do whatever they wanted to do. I mean, everyone was afraid. They didn't know what was going on. But you look at the Imperial College record. In 2001, they looked at the foot and mouth disease. This was a problem in Britain at the time. And they said that the daily case rate would peak at 420 deaths, and it peaked actually at 50. Then we had mad cow in 2002, and the Imperial College of London said there'd be 150,000 deaths in the UK. There actually were 178. Then bird flu, 2005, Imperial College of London said there'd be 200 million deaths globally, and there were 456 deaths. 2009, swine flu, they said there'd be 65,000 deaths from the Imperial College of London's modeling, and there were actually 500. So the fear machine comes out of these epidemiological models, and you say, well, why are they so far off? And they're so far off because the models assume that the pandemic hits, and no one adjusts to the pandemic. They just go about their business as they've done before. This is, to get a handle on this, think of the Spanish flu in the early 20th century in the United States. It hit big time in New York. There were a lot of deaths. But that news went out over the wires, and by the time it got into Chicago, what happened to the Spanish flu, the death rate was way down because people adjusted. They were careful. Then by the time I got to San Francisco, you know, that was even later, the lag, the death rate were even lower in San Francisco because they had time to adjust. People were adjusting. They didn't just stand there and get the Spanish flu. They did what they thought was appropriate to avoid it.
But there's a whole mindset of people that don't think people can think for themselves and make those kind of decisions. So they need government to come in and mandate these things for our own best interest, because we're all idiots who would do, you know, what's not in our best interest unless government decides for us, right?
Yeah. This of course is a great joke. It's what I call a hot stove effect. If somebody tells you that the stove is hot, what do? You don't put your hand on the stove.
Right.
So you know, people are rational. if they're given good information and warned about things, most people, not all people, but most people will heed the warnings.
Professor, it's great to have you on. It's an excellent study, and I know that I had Phil Kirpin on yesterday, and this is the last thing I'll ask you. He said that Biden's been given different information. He's been given information that said lockdowns were a huge hit. You guys have offered to present your data, your research to the White House, and so far nobody's gotten back to you. And I think that the reason why, of course, is because, you know, the left loves the bureaucracy and the authoritarianism and the power, and they want to use it in the future whenever they want. And they don't want to acknowledge everything that you've exposed here, which is that these lockdowns not only didn't do anything to help COVID, the societal harm that they caused, we are still just feeling the effects, and we may feel the effects for generations of this. So that was really troubling for me to hear that.
Yeah. There's no question about it. I mean, it's not only the White House doesn't want to hear, but we've got essentially under a shroud of secrecy a process going on at the World Health Organization that if it comes to fruition eventually, the World Health Organization in Geneva will have control over everything. They will lock the world down if what we anticipate is coming down the pike at the World Health Organization, the national sovereignty will disappear completely. The World Health Organization will be in charge. If there's a panic and they ring the bell at the World Health Organization, they will give you orders and you will follow those orders. You won't follow the orders coming out of Washington.
Scary stuff. Amazing. Steve Hanke, professor of applied economics at Johns Hopkins University and former senior economist for President Ronald Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors. Thank you, sir. It's been an honor. I appreciate it.
Great. Great to be with you. Have a good evening.
You too.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right. Natural Lawn of America. Let's talk about it. Why did I choose them so many years ago? Why have I kept using them year after year? I'll tell you why. It's because they specialize in your lawn, specific to your lawn's needs. That's what separates Natural Lawn of America from all these other lawn care companies that are out there. And it's that time of year again when you got to think about your lawn, because before you know it, the grass is going to be overgrown with weeds, taking away from the beauty of your home. So swing into spring with Natural Lawn of America's safer lawn care treatments. Natural Lawn has been creating green lawns quickly, more naturally, and with fewer weeds for over 35 years. And this is not a one-size-fits-all lawn care company. So when they came to my house last week, the technician wrote up detailed notes about why he's applying these treatments for my lawn, what the game plan is going forward. So my lawn is different from everybody else's lawn, and that's how Natural Lawn of America operates. They deal with your lawn specifically. No cookie-cutter approaches here. You know what else I love? They're locally owned and family operated, and they're right here in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Natural Lawn is competitively priced, and they have a satisfaction guarantee, and you will be satisfied. Get started today. Take advantage of their limited time offer, free seeding every year. Schedule Natural Lawn's full service program, the program that I get, and you'll get free seeding every year. Now, that overseeding makes such a difference for your lawn. So call 1-800-FREE-SEED, 1-800-FREE-SEED, or visit naturallawn.com. Trust the leader in organic-based lawn care, Natural Lawn of America, greener grass, fewer weeds, guaranteed.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
Well, that's a great find. You just sent me Matt DeSantis. Thank you. This is a great tweet from Brent Scher on X. Unhinged New York Times still hasn't accepted the results of the 2000 election. Can they get prosecuted for that? For election denialism? I think that's a crime, right? Isn't that what they're going after Trump for?
The tweets, or I guess not, it's a screenshot of Robert McFadden's obituary. He's a, I believe he's a Pulitzer Prize winner for the New York Times.
No. It's not his obituary.
No, it's the obituary he wrote for Joe Lieberman. Yeah, sorry to be.
So Robert McFadden wrote it. So let me read it to you. Joseph I. Lieberman, Connecticut's four-term United States Senator and Vice President Al Gore's Democratic running mate in the 2000 presidential election, which was won by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney when the Supreme Court halted a Florida ballot recount. Died on Wednesday in Manhattan. He was 82. They gave more words to the election dispute than they did to Lieberman in the opening paragraph of his obituary. That's amazing. That's amazing. Freaking obituary. They spent more time talking about the 2000 election and how the court decided it. I love that. So he says, unhinged New York Times still hasn't accepted the results of the 2000 election. That's fantastic. I'm going to retweet that or re-exit. The greater Chris sent another, he sent a story today. I love this. Just the headline alone. This is fantastic. Ready? I can't even say this with a straight face. Melting polar ice is slowing the Earth's rotation with possible consequences for timekeeping. So we might be, I guess we might be slowing down time. I'm not quite sure. Duncan Agnew, a geophysicist at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, said that as ice at the poles melt, it changes where the Earth's mass is concentrated. This change in turn affects the planet's angular velocity. And he compared it to a figure skater. So less solid ice at the poles means more mass around the equator. And he says, what you're doing with the ice melt is you're taking water that's frozen solid in places, and that frozen water is melting. You move the fluids to other places on the planet. And I guess he just keeps writing things that just will eventually confuse you. But he points out, he says, because of a combination of factors, the Earth's rotation could be counteracted. The Earth has begun to spin faster in recent decades, a temporary trend that has prompted scientists for the first time to consider subtracting a single negative leap second from clocks worldwide as soon as 2026. But the melting of polar ice has delayed that possibility by about 3 years. If timekeeping organizations do eventually decide to add a negative leap second, the adjustment could disrupt computer networks. So climate change is going to cause, remember they had that thing in the year 2000 was the 00 problem?
Y2K?
Y2K. Yeah. We were all going to die because the computers weren't going to be able to flip to zero or something. Well, that's going to happen now because of climate change. And the Earth's daily rotation has trended slower, but I guess now we're speeding up. Now, here's my question. Can we speed up fast enough to get to a point now where we all are dead because of climate change? Because I don't know if I can take any more of this. That's what I want to know. So now we're not going to be able to tell time because of climate change. We're not, regardless of whether clocks wind up changing, the notion that melting polar ice is affecting the Earth's rotation speaks to how significant an issue it has become. So we have to get rid of a leap second, a second. We're going to do away with a second every year.
Well, when they say leap second, is it every year or every 4 years?
Oh, that's a great point. It may be every 4 years. So that means then that we are going to, does that mean we die sooner or do we die earlier? I can't figure that out, that part out. Are we going ahead in time or backwards in time? 1 second, gone. How does that affect the show? Does that mean we can be done a second earlier every day? Because I personally would appreciate that. I'd like that. That'd be a benefit to me personally. If we could just get out 1 second earlier from this 4 hour show.
It looks like it would just benefit us once per year, according to the research I'm looking at. Although another geophysicist is saying it won't occur until 2029. So now I don't know what to believe.
So if I sign a really long contract, I might be able to shave a couple seconds off the show by the year 2057.
Yeah.
All right. Yay, climate change.
That's free money. That's...
It's almost 30 seconds of your life you're getting back.
If the Odyssey corporate suits find this out, they'll deduct our pay. They'll be like, no, they will. You guys are working less now, so we have to shave off some of your money. All right, listen, Professor. We live in the dumbest time ever. Professor Martin Kulldorff is going to join us. He's been canceled by Harvard. This is fantastic. You're going to love this interview. Harvard tramples the truth when it comes to debating COVID lockdowns. Veritas was not the university's guiding principle. That's straight ahead as we do 30 minutes of nonstop talk. Don't go away.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7. Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.